Hello, I'm Inoch Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. December 1st was World AIDS Day. The World Health Organization says HIV has claimed over 40 million lives globally and remains a major global public health issue. WHO data reveal that about 39 million people were living with HIV at the end of 2022, with two-thirds of them in the African region. A new UNAIDS report urges governments to empower grassroots communities worldwide to lead the fight to end the AIDS threat by 2030, but only if communities on the front lines get the full support they need from governments and donors. Paul Ndiho has more.
9.2 million people worldwide living with HIV do not have access to life-saving treatment. Every single minute, a life is lost to AIDS. And every week, 4,000 adolescent girls and young women are newly infected by HIV. Those figures are in a new report from the Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS. The UNAIDS agency is urging governments to unleash the power of community organizations to lead the fight to end AIDS. The African continent is home to two-thirds of all people living with HIV/AIDS. There are concerns that there is a blind spot in the response to HIV globally when it comes to providing HIV services to men and boys. Some AIDS activists say that it's particularly true in South Africa. Lebohanga Siboni, a peer educator and mentor at Men's Forum, explains.
Basically, we talk with men. In a session of a dialogue, it can be a session of whereby we like calling the tavern interventions. That's whereby we go to the taverns, have a group of guys, discuss with them on issues that affect them as men.
Men are less likely than women to use health services. They are less likely to take an HIV test, which means they are less likely to know whether they are HIV positive. Charles Nfefu, founder Men's Forum NGO, explains the importance of a community-led organization.
We need to change and focus on men and change the social behavior in terms of men's health also. Men were neglected, they didn't want to go to clinic, they don't even have information about the HIV and AIDS.
Ndishani Mungoni is a prevention advisor at UNAIDS.
Communities are at the center of HIV response. You are not going to win the battle or the fight against HIV at a clinic level. At the policy level, you win it in the community.
Experts say gender-based violence, multiple sexual partners, and the irregular use of condoms means that men's sexual partners face increased risks of acquiring HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
For more on the UNAIDS report and the fight against HIV/AIDS, I spoke with Anjali Achrekar, UNAIDS Deputy Executive Director. Take a listen.
We can actually celebrate the incredible progress that has been made, particularly on the continent of Africa, over the past 20 years. We are seeing 70% declines in AIDS deaths since the peak of the epidemic. We're seeing record lows of new infections of HIV. And the reason we have focused on letting communities lead as the focus of the report, but also the theme for World AIDS Day, is because what we have learned is that the path to end AIDS has truly been trailblazed by communities themselves. Countries that are succeeding when they have communities at the front line of the AIDS pandemic that are leading the way. So they have really shown us, and we've learned from country after country what is possible when communities lead.
So what are some of the challenges that communities are confronted with when they embrace and try to take a leadership role in the fight against HIV/AIDS, and how can it be addressed?
You know, the challenges that communities face is related to being under-acknowledged, being under-resourced, and in some cases, being under attack. In terms of being under-acknowledged, we know that when communities are front and center, when they are the ones designing the the interventions, when they are the ones implementing the HIV prevention and treatment programs, when they are the ones working together with governments to monitor the programs, these are the countries that are succeeding. But when they are not acknowledged, when they are not put front and center, when they are not allowed to lead, they are challenged. Second, in terms of being under-resourced, it is not okay for communities to do these services for free or voluntarily. We need to make sure that governments and institutions, organizations are fully and adequately resourcing communities to do the work that is required and that they know how to do so well. And then third, and this is a real challenge, third, there are many policies and structural barriers that are prohibiting communities from doing the good work that they do. There are anti-human rights laws. There's shrinking civic space. There are laws and policies where communities are having a very difficult time to actually be recognized, but also to implement the work that they do. And so we need to protect rights of communities so that they can flourish and they can lead.
What metrics and indicators can be used to really assess the impact of community-led interventions, and how can these be effectively measured?
You know, metrics, what gets measured gets done. And so metrics is such an important question that you ask about. And what we're really excited about is that when the world came together, every member state across the entire world, when they came together and convened around and decided on the political declaration to end AIDS in 2021 and the global strategy that was then created or produced through the political declaration, countries agreed to the very fact that they would fund HIV funding through civil societies to ensure that they're appropriately funded. Also, in the political declaration and in the global AIDS strategy that every single country has signed on to, countries have agreed to make sure that what we call community-led interventions are supported by 30-60-80 targets. What that means is that 30% of testing and treatment services should be delivered by community-led organizations. 60% of programs support the achievement of these societal enablers or policies to be delivered by community-led organizations. And 80% of services on HIV prevention programs for key populations and women and other marginalized populations should be delivered by community populations and community groups. So these are metrics that are in place. The problem is that we are not meeting these targets. And so it's really important that we hold ourselves to account, we hold governments to account, and we hold other organizations and institutions to account so that those 30, 60, 80 targets are indeed being met.
So what are the recommendations in terms of fostering collaboration between communities and other stakeholders, including government, NGOs, and healthcare providers?
Fostering collaboration in this multi-sectoral way that includes communities at the center, that includes governments and all sectors of governments, health, finance, gender ministries, law enforcement, for example, non-governmental organizations, and other health providers. This has been a principle that's been shared in the global HIV response from the very beginning. It's been something that's made it unique. And frankly, it's been one of the things that has made it been so successful, is having this broad collaboration between communities and these other stakeholders. You know, we continue to emphasize this, letting communities lead, in the report that we've put out for World AIDS Day, because we know that is what works. Having communities and people at the center of the response is what works. So on this World AIDS Day, we're actually not only putting out the report, but we're making a call to the world to say, please make sure we are acknowledging the vital role that communities play. we are adequately resourcing them, and third, we are protecting their rights so that they can continue to play that critical leadership role that they have in the HIV response, but also across other health threats.
What is the message then for this World AIDS Day?
The message for this World AIDS Day is let communities lead and let's not stop the fight. We are not finished yet. Let's keep on going.
Anjali Ashrekar, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Anjali Ashrekar, UNAIDS Deputy Executive Director. Now to East Africa. With a population of 1.4 million people living with HIV, Kenya stands as one of the African nations grappling with high infection rates, ranking seventh in the continent. However, Kenya has made significant progress as over the past decade, there has been a significant reduction of 78% in new infections and a 57% decrease in AIDS-related deaths. The East African country now aims to eliminate the pandemic by 2030. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
In Dandora neighborhood in Nairobi, we meet Lucy Wanjiko at work. Wanjiko says she felt like her life was torn into pieces 13 years ago when, as a teenage mother, right from high school, she tested positive with HIV. Her child died 2 weeks later. She picked up the pieces of her life, and years later, she used them to build Positive Young Women Voices, a community-based organization that advocates for and supports girls and young women affected by HIV in the same neighborhood that she grew up in.
There's a girl somewhere, the same way I felt I had no one to hold my hand, probably needs me now to come in and hold her hand. Probably listening to my story, she'll make better choices than the ones I did, and she won't have to go through what I had gone through.
Since the discovery of the first HIV case in Kenya 4 decades ago, the country has made significant progress in improving HIV care over the years. Dr. Lynette Juma, an infectious disease specialist in Nairobi, says investment in training of healthcare professionals in the management of HIV, increased health facilities in various parts of the country, as well as free medication for HIV patients, are some of the factors that have contributed to improvement of HIV care in Kenya.
So this has really led to a big impact because we've been able to see a reduction in the prevalence of HIV. For example, in 1996, we had a prevalence of around 10.3% in the country. Right now, we are talking about 4.9%. So that's a very, very big impact. There's reduction in mortality. There's reduction in morbidity. So it's not, we are not in the era where you see someone who looks skinny, emaciated, and you're like, oh, that is HIV/AIDS. I mean, people are living healthy and able to mingle with everyone else without their status being known.
Of the 1.4 million people living with HIV in Kenya, 1.1 million are enrolled on antiretroviral therapy, with 73% of them achieving viral suppression, according to the country's Ministry of Health data. The data also indicates that the number of new infections has slowed by 78%, and AIDS-related deaths reduced by 57% over the past decade. Despite the milestones achieved, health experts say stigma and prevention of mother-to-child transmission still remain a challenge. Wanjiko says she has witnessed improvement.
I tested when I was 2 months pregnant. I never got tested again. But now this testing, I think when you, for every visit you go to the clinic as a pregnant woman or mother, you have to get tested. And I think that seems like it beats the purpose, but it really helps. It would have really helped. And even when you're going to give birth, you still get tested. So if you are negative along the way, you still get tested. And I think that sets us up for success.
The 2023 theme of the World AIDS Day, marked every year on December 1st, is Let Communities Lead. Juma says communities have a fundamental role in eradication of HIV in Africa.
There's a lot of measures that can be put in place when you know your status, be informed. And that way, I think Africa will be able to eradicate the HIV infection.
Kenya aims to eradicate HIV by 2030. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. The Population Council has announced that dapivirine vaginal ring has now gained regulatory approval or authorization for use in 11 countries in East and Southern Africa. Made of flexible silicone, the ring slowly releases the antiretroviral drug dapivirine in the woman's private part over a one-month period. Anita Garg, Senior Director for Strategy and Commercial Relations with the Population Council, says the ring was developed to provide a long-acting prevention method for women when higher efficacy products like daily oral PrEP are not viable options.
So dapivirine ring is a vaginal ring made of a flexible silicone. It's inserted into a woman's vagina for 1 month at a time, and it slowly releases an antiretroviral drug called dapivirine at the site of potential infection. So dapivirine works by preventing the virus from being able to replicate itself or make copies of itself inside of a healthy cell. Therefore, by women using it, they can reduce their risk of acquiring HIV from sexual infection.
What makes the dapivirine ring a unique tool in the landscape of available tools to prevent HIV/AIDS, especially with women?
So the dapivirine ring is a unique tool because it adds something new to the current available biomedical HIV prevention options. The ring is discreet, so women can use it, they can insert it themselves, and it can be left there for a month at a time. So there's no remembering to have to take pills on a daily basis, and there's no need to go in and get an injection every couple of months from your doctor. It's something that women can control themselves, and it gives them empowerment over their sexual health.
What does the data show in terms of safety and efficacy?
Yeah. So the dapivirine ring was tested in two large phase 3 clinical trials, and those trials demonstrated that the risk of HIV acquisition was able to be cut by about a third. Then we moved into another set of trials where women knew that they were getting the dapivirine ring and instead of getting a placebo ring. And what we found is that they used it more consistently. With that consistent use, the data showed closer to more than half of a reduction in HIV acquisition, so about more than 50%. And when we even look at modeling studies from other clinical studies, we find that when women use the product more, they're more likely to be protected from HIV. And those data can go beyond even 50%. So that's the when it comes to efficacy. So if women use it consistently, they have a significant risk reduction from HIV. And as far as safety, in the trials that we did, we saw no safety concerns using the product. The product is great in that it delivers drugs locally in the vagina, so the drug is not being circulated throughout the body. So there's a much lower potential for side effects. So the ring is considered to be quite safe.
Why is the dapivirine ring needed now?
So young women and adolescent girls in Africa are 3 times more likely to acquire HIV than young men and adolescent boys in sub-Saharan Africa. We see the ring as a critical tool needed to be able to expand HIV prevention options for women. We want to empower women with choice, and we hope that this will help to have a real impact on the HIV epidemic.
Dapivirine has now gained regulatory approval or authorization through import permits for use in 11 countries in East and Southern Africa. Tell us more about the process it underwent. How long did it take? What data was considered?
Sure. Well, we've been developing the dapivirine ring for many years. And in 2020, we received what's considered a positive scientific opinion from the European Medicines Agency. So they did a full review of all of the safety data and all of the efficacy data that we have generated throughout the years on the product. And they provided us with that positive scientific opinion. That then led to the World Health Organization giving a pre-qualification to the product, which meant that a year later in 2021, they included the dapivirine ring in their HIV guidelines, therefore recommending it for use by women who are at significant risk of HIV infection. We then began submitting for approval in several African countries, and we've been very happy to see many countries approve the ring, and we hope to see many more in the future.
Talk to us about availability and access. What is that going to look like, or what does it look like presently?
Yeah, so presently we are doing production of the ring. That's happening at our current manufacturer in Sweden. The rings are being distributed also by a company that we're working with out of Europe. But rings are mostly being bought right now by large procurement bodies, such as the Global Fund. And the U.S. government, through its PEPFAR program, also buys rings for implementation and pilot research. And those rings are then being made through available to women through public programs at no cost to those women. We're also starting to explore the ability to make the ring available in the private sector, so through pharmacies and through physicians, and that's something that we hope to build out even further.
The Population Council is working in partnership with a local company in South Africa to make the product available locally. Talk to us about this move and why it's important.
So this is something that we're really, really excited about. The Population Council has just recently entered into a memorandum of understanding with Kiara Health to grant them this exclusive license to the dapivirine ring. Kiara Health is a 100% Black-owned African pharmaceutical and manufacturing and also healthcare solutions company. They're based in Johannesburg, South Africa. And they have the ability, the expertise, and the capacity to take on this product and help to really drive its uptake and expansion across Africa. Right now, they have a wide range of products that they handle, and they're very excited to partner with us. And so we're looking forward to that. Another really exciting element is that they are interested in building up the ability to do local production of the ring. So the ring is right now produced in Europe. But doing the production and the manufacturing of the ring locally in South Africa will also allow for the overall price of the ring to drop. And so this is something that we see as a really important and strategic move for the product.
So what are we looking at in terms of cost right now? And what does a move like that with Kiara Health will bring in terms of diminishing the cost?
So right now, the ring is being made available to government bodies and to procurement bodies to purchase at a price of about U.S. dollars, 12 to 15 or so dollars, depending on the country. We think that moving the manufacturing locally into Africa will allow that price to be cut significantly. And I think that it will also be even more potentially more options to be able to reduce the price based on another product we have in our portfolio, which is a longer acting dapivirine ring that women can use for 3 months, therefore really bringing down the annual cost of using the product. But even moving the production locally, we think will have a significant impact.
And the Population Council is developing a longer duration dapivirine ring that women would use for 3 months versus 1 month that it is currently used for. Tell us more about that and the projected time frame for its availability.
Sure. Yeah, we're really, really excited about this product. Women would have a longer duration of HIV prevention and potentially more convenience because they'd only be needing to use 4 rings a year instead of 12. So yes, this would certainly drive down the annual cost of using the rings. And right now we are completing what we hope will be the final clinical trial that is needed for the product. And we'll be starting to submit for regulatory approvals in the beginning part of 2025. Therefore, by 2026, we hope to have initial access to this longer duration HIV prevention ring.
How do you foresee the approval of dapivirine vaginal ring impacting global efforts to reduce HIV transmission, especially on the continent of Africa?
So we see the ring as being one more option, one more choice in the toolbox of HIV prevention options that are already available. We think it's really important that women are able to make their own choices for what product will fit their needs and their preferences, which may change at different parts of their life. And we think that by providing more options, we will increase the population of women who are comfortable and will opt to use HIV prevention, therefore increasing HIV prevention overall and having an impact on the HIV epidemic.
What is the ring for, the vaginal ring for?
The ring is intended to be for women who are looking to protect themselves against HIV. Right now, in most countries, it's intended for women 18 and older, although we do have data that supports its use in younger women, and that's something that we will be seeking to expand that the use population to younger women. It's for women who do not find taking oral pills suitable for their lifestyle, or they're not able to access them. For women who may or may not be able to use other types of HIV prevention and want another option. It's something that is discreet, that women can control themselves, and can offer them protection at the points and times in their life where they feel that it's useful for them.
Is it safe to use for pregnant mothers, lactating mothers?
So the initial approvals of the ring were just in women who were not pregnant and not breastfeeding. However, another thing we're really excited about is the availability of new data showing the safety of the ring and no safety concerns seen in women who are pregnant or women who are breastfeeding. And so that's another area where we hope to be able to expand the population of women that can use the ring to those very important key populations.
That's Anita Garg, Senior Director for Strategy and Commercial Relations with the Population Council. And that's all for this edition of Health Chat.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000.